Can we then commence with our meeting? The, I'll start by welcoming everyone here who has shown up today, including our members. And then allow Ariko to just give us to give us apologies.
Thank you, Chair. We've received an apology from Honorable Tobeti, who's on leave, Honorable Manamela, and Honorable Singh, and Honorable Holomisa, Chair. Those four apologies.
Thank you, Ariko. Colleagues, the purpose of this gathering here is that of public hearings on SMME access to finance. We have started with this hearing last Tuesday. We continued yesterday, and today is the last day of this hearing. As we indicated, members, before, we did receive written submissions, and as requested, we also indicated that if there are people who are interested in giving oral representation or oral presentation can do so. And today we will be dealing with this hearing from now in the morning until late afternoon. I will then amend the program a bit. Instead of starting with Mr. Kaba from Africa Empowered, we will start with Mr. Abraham. Yes, I don't know from Abraham. Okay. I don't know from which company. Independent consultant. Okay. Yes, we will then, without a waste of time, hand over to Mr. Abraham to give us his part of presentation. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, good morning to you, ladies and gentlemen.
Just before you continue, Mr. Abraham, yes. Just a few rules. I just want to indicate that you must observe the time stipulated in the agenda. And I'm going to be using a timer. If you hear beep, beep, I'll give you an indication towards at least when you are left with 5 to 4 minutes. And it will give a sound to indicate that your time is up. We will have to be strict on time today because we are quite tight. Yes.
Thank you very much. The concerns that I've got with regard to support to SMEs, I believe that more support to be given to the small business, who I feel we can kickstart the economy with regard to job creation, much quicker and far quicker and easier than corporate business. I believe also that aggressive marketing is required to focus on small business development and less red tape when these businesses need assistance to register their business or seek advice. To date, there is still a struggle for these businesses to get necessary advice, support, and the necessary training of transfer skills and knowledge. There may be some institutions in the market that does it, but it's not coming to the fore. Okay. I didn't think it could be that quick. Some members may have the technical skills, but lack the knowledge of managing their business. From a management to financial matters, a program of mentorship and training is needed through this aggressive campaign. And then with regard to mentoring and business advisors, mentorship unlocks the country's unlimited possibilities. It raises the standard of individual performance and challenges the mentors and mentees. Mentors improve their own communication, leadership and management skills and the advantages for those who learn from them include impoverished academic skills, valuable experience, and better communication. They also learn to set realistic goals and how to work towards them, flowing from their basic business plan to a more detailed one as the business develops. There must be a proper implementation of mentorship and training as a way to contribute to South Africa's development. Potential members must be trained to become mentors or advisors to other emerging businesses. They must be exposed to structured positive mentoring, which in turn will have positive spin-off for development in our country. Mentors can come from established business or retired businessmen. Next page, promotion of services by government-supported agencies. I believe no real formal advertising from government-supported agencies to market their agency or their services in local newspapers or billboards. And this is now all your different agencies that get support from government. There is not enough advertising to market their business or the services that they offer. You know, a point that I want to make, we know that the cooler has moved from Claremont to Cape Town, or there is a redo in the retreat, for example. There's been no advertising or no notification that has come to that specifically. No program for transfer of skills and knowledge through a formal structure of training, example, workshops on financial planning or principles of business management or mentoring. Some business owners have the technical ability to produce or manufacture but lack the business or financial skill to run the business effectively. The only form of advertising, I believe, is from a newspaper paper like Big Issue, but does it reach the focus market, the small businessman? These newspapers are only put down at these agencies that I'm referring to. And so the small business, you know, don't really get it unless there's a better distribution of this paper. But I also believe that local newspapers and the community newspapers should be made use of, you know, to advertise their services and their business. The only finance really available to small businesses is the other point that I wanted to make, is the commercial bank. Why is there no government support bank similar to the land bank? It's all to do with the commercial bank and the rates that they charge. Small business should have the necessary support when you do well to improve their business even more, not when the wheels come off or and they have lost their life savings through the downturn in the economy or lack of experience. When do one introduce the key elements of a business plan to small business? Can the CETA program help the cause of small business and how? And the conclusion that I want to make, people are not born to be leaders, they become good leaders in the process of positive inputs and transfer of knowledge and skills. And ongoing skills development is vital for the sector. It's not where we come from, but what we can become. The quality, ability, and improved performance should be the criteria for a better life. Big business and corporate can all rally around government's call to support small business, whether it is a request for tenders or request for quotations. There just need to be a support to small business to grow the SME sector and support the ongoing transfer of skills and development. That is, in a nutshell, is what I wanted to present to you, Madam Chair, and to the people. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Abraham. Okay. Members, this is a presentation from Mr. Abraham. Let's hear what members are saying in response to this. Just questions for clarity and comments. Comments are meant to clarify the members, but not to critique the paper. I think it must be taken in that spirit. I'm noting Ms. Nduli, a member Marais, member Madam Line, member Mabasa, Dr. Rabi. that order of interest?
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation from Mr. Abrams. I just want to check with Mr. Abrams whether he had an opportunity of engaging with the government DFIs, I'll say the Kula, SAMAF, and IDC. I mean, with your suggestions and your advices, was there any opportunity for you to engage with them? Because I think what you are saying is about the awareness, community awareness, that these DFIs do exist. Just to check that whether it's because we have not been given an opportunity or you have met them before. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Just two things you have mentioned again about decreasing the red tape or taking away a lot of red tape. Which red tape are you referring to, and how do you suggest that this be decreased? So in other words, I think you've got more practical recommendations as well in that regard. And then with regards to mentoring the business advisors, I think everybody agrees that that is very important. But again, one comes to the question of how and who. How do you see the role of government in this regard? How do you see the role of private sector and maybe organized business, whether it's small business or BUSA or whatever? Because somehow someone must now take responsibility not for only making sure that we've got the right mentors and business advisors, but it must be funded as well, and it must be registered as well. There must be a register, it must be administrated as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Mara. Ma'am Lai.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My apologies for being late, but it was something that I cannot prevent. I just want to ask Mr. Abrams that on the promotion of service by government-supported agencies, the last bullet he mentioned that can the CETA program help the cause of small businesses and how? I just want to know from Mr. Abrams, what is his view of the CETAs and how the CETAs can help the small businesses? Thank you.
Thanks, Nanda. Mr. Mavasa.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. My question is, it's two questions. The first one is on page, the very first page is bullet two, aggressive marketing. Who should do that marketing and how, noting that we're speaking from the perspective of small business, and it is one of the causes for failure, lack of marketing. And then the second one is on the very following page, second bullet from the bottom, which is combined with the first bullet, in other words, on mentorship. Who should pay for the costs? Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Mr.
Mavasa.
Dr. Rabi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Abrams, in your paper, I think it's the second last page, you say, I'd like to have further clarity. You've made two statements here. You says, when do one introduce the key elements of a business plan to small business? Now I'd just like to have your views on that. It's my contention that you do not start a small business without a business plan, but maybe you can give a clarification on that. And then you also say, can the CETA program help the cause of small business and how? I'd like you to elaborate on this statement as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Rabi. Any other? Take it to covered. Mr. Abrams, we're asking this question. You'll be the last to respond. Surely there are There's one issue that perhaps most of the people are complaining about, that of lack of information for small businesses or even animation businesses. Some would say it's because they can't afford newspapers. Some would say they do not even have access to television or something like that. But the response to that is that most of emerging business and small businesses, owners, do not want to enlighten themselves, especially about programs in place, government programs in place, even the private sector programs in place. Would you agree with that? Or would you, you can note it.
Yes,
would you say perhaps it's there's something that can be done much more better in terms of marketing and promotion of the programs by government?
Right.
I have another one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
You are recommending here that in terms of mentorship and business advising, you think what can work best in terms of mentoring can come from established businesses or retired businessmen and women. Some business, what you would term established businesses or even retired business people, tend to be quite bossy when, for instance, and want to sort of adduce the words that I normally hear from people, small business people, saying they would want to brainwash them, you know, tell them what to do. It's not something that they would input their own, you know, views into the business, but they would want them to be shaped as, you know, like that. So I just want to hear your view. You are an independent consultant. Obviously, you're dealing with the business, youngsters or emerging businesses. Would you say that is the problem, or you feel that they are misunderstood, or is it because of the way they, you know, they come across these youngsters, or is it because of the way we were all raised, you know, the bridge, bridging the gap between the old and the new and the what you call modern and the older ways of doing things? What you do attribute this to the complaint to that I've just given you? Those are my two issues, and I just want to hear your views on the new growth path. Any hope from that, from what you heard?
Madam Chair, first and foremost, there was a question on the cost for mentorship and advisors. I think, you know, I was actually referring to in the main when it is more aggressive campaign on marketing. I was referring specifically to the agencies that get government support. They to advertise their services or the products that they have in a better way, if you know, than what is currently happening. There are billboards. I'm not talking about small businesses or SMEs to do aggressive marketing in that campaign. I'm talking about those agencies that have to advertise themselves, where they are, what they are doing, and how they're doing things in one form or another. That is the first point that I wanted to make with regard to aggressive campaign on marketing, specifically referring to those agencies. The second one, cost. The only group that I do know of that has a pool of mentors and advisors other than Kula is also the business partners. It is in a controlled environment, and the business advisors will meet on a regular basis, and they have to give feedback as to what they've done and how they've done things. So it's not a matter only, you know, of being you know, wanting to be the parent and wanting to control everything with regard to, if that is the kind of business advisor that you are, then obviously there's a problem. You have to go in there and let them understand that you are there to assist them in the business and into and this is my point that I also wanted to make. Don't only go to the ones, you know, that are struggling. Go to the ones that are doing well as well, so that they can improve themselves from the experience that you give. But it is how that group, the group of advisors either have to come from your agencies, that has to have a structure in place there from your different agencies that you have, your CEDARS, your COOLARS, all of them, REDOs, all there. That is what I'm actually referring to. And they will have to come up with a cost also, because ultimately they get funded anyway from government to do this kind of service. That's the first point that I wanted to make. With regard to CETA, the different CETAs are doing their bit in providing the necessary services and also making sure that the criteria is followed from the different CETAs, from the chemical, the wholesale and retail CETAs. All the CETAs have a criteria for these institutions to follow through. I was just thinking that is a possibility of the very same agencies that I'm referring to say to CETA, you know, we want to start a program. What can we do to assist small businesses, SMEs, in our institution, in our agency? And then it will be in a structured way. So I'm not saying that CETA is not working. I'm just saying, you know, we need to expand on that and see whether there's a possibility of your CETA going into those agencies, because they are already established agencies. Maybe there's a possibility of doing a structured training program within those institutions as well. Other than just having, you know, your computers in there and your small businesses coming there, going onto the internet and all that, there should be more transfer of knowledge and training.
Is it CETA or CEDA?
CETA. But CEDA is a small enterprise development agency, but I'm talking about CETA.
Which CETA?
Any CETA that can support small businesses with regard to training. And it can either go into a CEDA program or a cooler one, but those agencies will have to come to the party and say, you know, we engage with CETA and say to them, you know, we want to do either a 2-month or a 3-month program on development training for small businesses, be it financial or business management. So that these, this is the next point that I want to do, to come to, is that SMEs can go immediately to those relevant agencies for a business plan. But there may be even some of them in a micro that starts off that don't necessarily need a business plan, but later on they may need a business plan because they're growing. And they will go to these relevant agencies that I was referring to, but these agencies will have to advertise themselves, not only in a big news or all the pamphlets at an agency where you go to and you pick up a pamphlet. If you don't know where they are, you will not get the pamphlet. So they need to advertise themselves so that, you know, those small businesses can go there and see what is available from a service point of view. That is and then only the red tape. It's a bit easier now for businesses to register themselves as CECs. It's not as difficult as it was before. But with regard, there is a lot of criteria that has to be met. For example, your parastatals or your provincial and city councils, they need to have now a BE certificate. It's not cheap. A BE certificate in order to qualify to tender for work is expensive. And if you don't have those certificates that is required from your local government and elsewhere, you will not be able to be seen to. And you must apply to the Quadrant, for example, in order to get onto the tender system. That is another cost that you have to have because you must have a certificate. That's the reason that I was talking about. I spoke to you about the business advisors and where it must come from and who and how. You and I can help. I think that is what I wanted to just answer to the questions that have been here. Is there anything that I left out?
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Abrams. Dr. Rabi, you need a follow-up for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, just a follow-up question. I think Mr. Abrams, I asked him a question about business plans. The statement that he made about when will the business plan, when should it be used? Thank you.
Where should the business plan be used the most? Okay. Can you respond to that? Babintula, you have...
I'm asking whether he had an opportunity to advise DFIs, particularly those who are supported by the government, because what is he saying here? You can say that it will be a good advice to those DFIs, but you I'm not sure whether you don't see a need of.
I have approached. Kula, I have another appointment to meet with Kula on the level of aggressive marketing and advertising that I spoke about of the agencies. I have not engaged with IDC or the DFA that you spoke about, but Kula I have approached. But all these agencies I have found that is not advertising the services, and that is what I will be following up with. Thank you, Mr.
And Dr.
Rabi? Yes. Dr. Rabi's one, business plans is needed immediately. There's no doubt about it that business plans are required when small businesses start out so that they do know where they're going and what they have to do. But I was just making a point in saying that if you are a micro business that starts out, it's a matter of just buying a few things and then starting out on a business. But yes, with regard to your business plan, everyone does need to have one.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Abrams. I guess the members have an idea of what your business is all about, and so your recommendations are obviously noted by the committee. We have here our DFIs, the three of them that are under the Department of Economic Development. We have Mr. Yasi from Kula, Enterprise. You heard what Mr. Abrams said. He did meet with you. He'll make a follow-up. Some of we have Mr. Alert, like we had yesterday. And then we have from DTI. What about that? Now I have something. We have from DTI, which is not actually our development finance institution, but it's a department. We have Mr. Zigode, who is the acting DDG. Okay, we have shall I just sit all for you? Okay, we have Mr. Nseko from ITC. I was asking about you, whether you did arrive or not. Obviously, I must do something about my eyes, my assistive device here. Okay, they are here to listen to you, and obviously the issue around not really advertisement, but making sure that you market yourself is very important. I don't know whether it is as a result of lack of presence in the most needy areas where you are mostly needed, because some of you are only existing in towns, big towns, and not where you need it. I think this has been a cry since yesterday, since we started here with this hearing. But we've heard you, Mr. Abrams, and thank you for the presentation. We are continuing with our Yeah, it looks like the secretary did not talk to the presenters in time. So they will have to again amend the agenda and go straight to Mobicom, which will be the presenter. There will be Mr. Skoll. You're welcome there. Mr. Kwaba, you'll tell us when you are ready, whenever you're available. You're ready? Okay, you'll come in this after. Okay, I'll be right. Thank you, welcome. You'll introduce the people you are with.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members. Let me start off by introducing to my left Edmund Didi. He is from the Western Cape Traditional Leaders, Diverse Traditional Leaders. Myself, I'm Eduard Skoll from Mobicom, as well as Willie on my right. He is an accountant in practition. Okay. We're coming to present the accountant in practition. Okay. Also from Mobicom. Okay. The reason why we're here, we would like firstly, I want to congratulate you. Very quickly on the new growth path strategy framework that was announced yesterday. I think to a certain extent it goes without saying that South Africa needs a bold and innovative, imaginative solution to address the problems that we have. Myself, I have been in the investment environment for more than 15 years. I was in the executive director as well of a broad-based empowerment company. 2003 till 2008, walk out of the empowerment environment because the fact of the matter is what we saw and what's addressed in the framework. So I hope by today we will be able to highlight an alternative model that is necessary in South Africa. Now, I start off by quoting the Honorable Gwen Mhlanga Makabinde in respect of indicating that we need something new. You know, what has worked up to the last 16 years is really has problems with that. And I'm going to continue and really, very much show you. Yesterday I was here, I sit in, and it was very fundamental. And I'm going to try and relax now, and I'm going to speak to you. Okay. It was very fundamental. In order to understand, for my part, as an investment person, as a business person, you need to understand that where is the money coming from. And the money coming from funders, but funders is looking for specific performances. First and foremost, they are definitely looking for cash flow, positive cash flow for operations. You know, let's not beat around the bush. It doesn't matter who you are. If you don't generate positive cash flows, future values is evaluated on that. Small business is evaluated on that. We had it a couple of times. Competitive for product and service delivery and offering is very important. Are you unique? What's your USP? Do you understand what your competition doing, et cetera, et cetera? How are you positioning yourself? Okay. Operational efficiency within business. You know, to a certain extent, we all understand the principle of
minimize input, maximize output, but how are you doing it? I think to a certain extent, now, for a youngster that's coming out of school and he's trying the business, in order to, and I want to put his, a website. He's got a website company in a township. How do you optimize that? How do you optimize bandwidth? Okay. How do you optimize your product offering? I think to a certain extent, that's the questions we ask. Consumer awareness and loyalty. Okay, they don't even know about it. Consumers is totally social apathy because they just want to buy it. There's a lot of brand consciousness. Okay. Competitive position obtained through value add in the supply chain. That is what also been seeked by the funders. They want to know, are you competitive? And where? How's your value chain? And what's your supplier base? Who do you interact with? How do you interact with? What's your distribution channels, et cetera, et cetera. I think that is all the facets of a value chain. Now, if you're not competitive, if you can't get the right answers, you don't get the money. And that was a very fundamental point yesterday. And I think to a certain extent, we must understand why value chains in South Africa is killing small business. That's the point I'm making. Okay. And I think to a certain extent, I want to put to you, and please, I'm putting here a company that is the darling of the stock exchange. And I'm not making it personal. I'm putting a factual reality to us. Okay. And if we look at ShopRite, which is target market is the lower LHMs, it is very much focusing on the community market. It's very much focusing on grant receivers, salary earners, government workers, etc., etc. You can see they might, despite the recession, anybody that has shares in ShopRite is smiling, especially if you're the chairman. Okay, if you look from June 08 till June 10, from 47 billion to 67 billion. My point is not that. That is serious progressive turnover. Good value chain. Good business. It is an awesome business. Okay. But what is the problem with this business? The problem is not with the business. It's the value chain that it represents. Okay. The value chain at this point in time, first and foremost, if we look at how much the distribution of dividends, collectively the last 3 years, over 3 billion rand of cash was taken out of economic circulation and given to a handful of shareholders. Okay. Secondly, how do you compete when they control the distribution channels, they control the suppliers? They determine the price, not the supplier anymore. Okay. The fact of the matter is they're putting in USAFE shops all over. That's a strategy. No problem with that. It's a good strategy. That's why they can trade at a PE of 18 plus. Let me just stop there. Okay. I think that is a very solid value chain. Now, this is not the only value chain. You've got the MTN value chain, you've got the Vodacom value chain. The fact of the matter is your value chains in this country have been very, very significant in hampering growth. And I make it, and I know I will get questions on it. Okay, next slide. I think to a certain extent, my belief, and this is only my belief, SME's biggest challenges in South Africa are strong and efficient value chains that have been developed in industries such as construction, retail, and communication, over years of limited economic participation by all. And then probably the most important thing for me is consumer ignorance and apathy towards social development agenda. They don't understand that someone else is milking their cow. Okay. I'm working for 2.5 years in communities. If you ask any consumer, where do you buy your groceries? There's one answer, which I'm not going to repeat here. Okay. Lack of effective incubating platforms for collective action such as program advocacy, consumer education, fundraising and loan syndication. I think we had a long discussion yesterday about that. I don't want to elaborate on that. It is absolutely true. We need to make sure we understand. There's fragmentation all over. Everybody wants to do his own thing. I think to a certain extent there is such amount of power if you can consolidate the consumer bases in communities. Ineffective have a very low levels of value contribution to consumers due to resource constraints in adequate skills levels. We addressed that yesterday in detail. Bank funding walls that is not designed to support low transaction base and higher risk investment exposure. The only bank at this point in time that is capitalizing on it. Again, the same system. It's the same value system, Capitec. Capitec is taking a lot of money out of communities, but it's a good system. It is low cost. Resource input, high technology, and that's the value chain. Okay. No, I think to a certain extent, and then the last one is provision and code of good practice charges, not really financially supportive. And I want to say to a certain extent, and I was glad to see that in the new growth strategy last night when I read it, it was indicated that to a certain extent, BEE is going to have a total overall. And I think to a certain extent, factors such as economic development, social entrepreneurship, and so forth, must be built into a very strong component of that. Okay. And it is indicated that that will be, because, but it must be substantially beneficial to the SME. Okay. From our side, sorry. This is a slide that's not in there, because last night when I went through the new growth strategy, I just realized there's a couple of slides that it's two or three of them. I apologize, but it's just very simple. The point I'm trying to make is that from our side, we believe that there must be a value-creating communication process. People must understand what you're trying to do. In order to break this mold of a non-cooperation, total apathy towards a cause, etc., etc. If we look at currently existing, if we look at the marketing strategy of the retailers, they communicate to you what they want you to hear and what they think you must do. The principle thereof is very simple. It is a zero game. They win, you lose. The fact of the matter, the money is in their pocket. What we need to have is a situation whereby we believe personally that there's a win-win. A win-win whereby the social structure in the community win, the supplier win, and that is possible. I will show you, and I hope someone asks me practical examples. We have arguments, say, with Westbank, with First National Bank, where we've put processes in place where both parties win. Okay. So that is our point. We say we communicate to mobilize the potential and unchanneled energy of others. And the whole model will be based on that. Just to go on. And then, maybe just very simple. It's a concept we believe. Concept-based action-orientated approach is the way to go. What we mean by that is focus on consumer spend and consumer education. Why? Consumer spend contributes 60% of GDP. To achieve a 7% GDP growth per year, consumer spend must increase at 4.2% per year. Now, if we all understand the principle of multiplying. Now, the fact of the matter is money turns once and it's in someone's pocket. There's no multiplication. Okay. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that. Now, obviously, a model must be able to address that. Okay. And I hope to prove to you that also that is possible. Now, where we're coming from, Madam Chair, very simple, is that we understand that the traditional value chain is there. It was a very powerful industrial tool in the industrial revolution. It was built by people and it was genuinely designed as a fine art. We believe to a certain extent that we must create value-creating processes in communities where the SME, and this is the point I'm trying to make, where the SME is put on the backbone of the infrastructure. And the infrastructure, I mean, for argument's sake, there is now the InfraCo. InfraCo is a state-owned entity. The state-owned entity on the back of that can provide and framework, okay, as prime mover for SMEs, provided that it is market correct, it is position correct, the design and the service offering is correct. Okay. That can function as an example. Okay. We've got real-life situations in Google Letter environment, where we are at this point in time. Our value-creating ecosystem, we've created primary consumer cooperatives, supported by secondary cooperative structures for value adds such as logistics, marketing, and financial matters. We've got local-owned spaza shop networks and a network involving, very important, disruptive mobile and ICT technologies. We also got interactive media platforms across all mediums. Media was indicated as a very important part of the communication strategy of the future in SME awareness, in educating the consumer, educating the social structures, the civics, etc., as well as in as institutional partners involved. Okay? Very simple how it looks. Okay, again, sorry, this is what's built in. It's a primary consumer co-ops formulated by 20 agents service 50 customers, and they've been supported by the secondary co-ops. This is typically how it looks, how you've, in areas, you have identify, zone in specific blocks, and that is the agent, and that agent is in that block. He understands the consumer, he understands the stakeholder, he understands the council, he understands the teacher, he understands the decision makers, he understands the old class of 76, a warlord that's sitting there and commanding acknowledgement for the fights of the past, etc. He understands the dynamics there. Okay, and from that perspective, you are able to make informed decisions in what is the deployment strategy. Okay, it is very much so. Such a community, such a primary co-op will then constitute out of a transport operator, one local spaza shop. Two members is trained in admin management, one member is trained in sales management, one in financial management, and all agents is a course called Sell, which they get trained in. Okay, this is typically, just to give you an indication on, currently the existing spaza next to Mazzoli's turnover was +9,000. Okay, we move 300 households, basic staple stock. There's a strategy, which I don't want, there's no time to do that. But there's a specific strategy. Obviously, you're not going to have all the shelf products. There's a specific strategy based on consumer spending, okay, which we've researched over 2.5 years, that we move through that stock. Okay, the warehouse, at that point in time, the warehouse is moved from 30,000 turnover to 750 per month on the fact that he is the hub for that specific community, okay, for that area. Very high level, the disruptive technology that we're using, e-wallet, electronic ordering, electronic disbursement, etc., etc., all that technology is available, okay? And then multiplying, I made the point on multiplier. The multiplier at this point in time, if you look at the model on the right, where the top one is the consumer goes to the shop, puts the money in the till, and the money is gone. There's no multiplication. On the left, the consumer, the depot maker, we just showed the local spaza, the agent, the administration portion, marketing, media, financial service, and training. 7 times that the money turned. Now, our whole, we will probably get a question on GPs, and we'll address that when the question comes. Okay, so that is 7 times versus once. Now, I think to a certain degree, my point I'm trying to make, and maybe just to close off, is that if money doesn't turn the community, it can't create value for that community. Very simple. Sounds like a rocket scientist to understand that. Okay. Good. Possible solutions to improve SME sustainability is reconfiguring or redesign innovative frame-breaking systemic solutions that will enable SME to effectively cooperate, co-produce, and coexist in value-creating ecosystems. I'll give you a practical example of one. That is what we believe. Now, that's a mouthful. It must be unpacked, etc., etc. And we also believe establishing effective cross-sectorial community-based incubating platforms for collective action such as business model advocacy. Now, the fact of the matter, if you are working up in the morning and you speak to the people and the people speak back to you and they tell you what is poverty, and you know, I understand poverty. I've been there. I've been there for 2.5 years. I put my own money in. I understand what it is. I'm sitting here today because I understand it. Okay. I understand what it is not to have money. Now, the fact of the matter is that it's the thinking. If you cannot change the thinking of the people, we're not going to get nowhere. And I think to some extent, that is why the agent, your agent is your informant. Your agent is your ambassador. Your agent is your change agent. Your agent is your hope giver, etc., etc. That is why it's so important. So this is not a direct marketing strategy. It is a medium with a message. And that is what we're trying to do. So, and that's my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kolsch. You know, the disadvantage on our part is the fact that we don't have the rest of your presentation. Because the secretary made copies on the basis of what you have sent. And unfortunately, what is called your presentation is not there. It was what you gave us through the presentation. I don't know what to do to continue. Members will be able to, did you manage to take notes? Because I found it very quick and very difficult to take notes immediately because, you know, reading graphs is unlike, you know, reading a narration. It's much better reading a narration than a graph. Can we just give a record 3 minutes to go and make those the copies quickly, and then we go to Baba, and then we'll come back for questions to Mobicom. But how long do they take on making copies? Where are they making them? Whether the presentation is full, can we check with them? Otherwise, we'll have to break. Yes. Okay. Can we get Mr. Mokoena, if your presentation is as you submitted it? Very important that we get a full picture of what you're talking about, because we are taking this hearing very, very important, very, very seriously, because they are going to form part of our motivation for other things. So, and I take it that as you're coming forth, you must take that into cognizance. Mr. Mukwena, is your presentation as presented? Okay. Thank you very much. May I hand over to yourself? And Mr. Mukwena is from Katleho Chemical. From Secunda, I can hear that Sasol has done well in their social responsibility. Okay. But they at least influenced you a lot. Okay, this was a timer for Mr. Scholz. We'll start afresh with you. Okay. Over to you, Mr. Mukwena.
Honorable members of the Legal Committee on Economic Development.
Press the mic on Mr. Mukwena.
Honorable members of Portfolio Committee on Economic Development. We would like to thank the Honorable Madam E.M. Coleman, the Chairperson Portfolio Committee, and all Honorable Members for inviting us to do submissions and making oral presentation. We really appreciate the opportunity you offered to us. So first I'll start by our background. Our company has two factories, one in the Free State in Gwagwa, one of the poorest former homeland, and another factory is in Mpumalanga, Kinross, Secunda. And our company was established in 1998, and we manufacture cleaning chemicals, household and industrial chemicals. Our plant is audited for good manufacturing practice audit based on SABS 049. Our products are SABS approved, and we currently supply ESCOM, Standard Bank, Gauteng Shared Services Center, provincial departments. We secured the lucrative contract to supply Pick and Pay and Boxer Superstores and other cash and carries. Our business has created 35 jobs and has potential to create plus minus 20 jobs in the short term. We approached most funding institutions such as IDC, NEF, MEGA, FDC, and many more with no success. Our business is at a stage where it's about to close down due to no access to finance and all jobs will be destroyed. It is not easy for SMEs, now this part is more of our experiences. It is not easy for SMEs to access funding, whether you have contract or not. It all depends on who you know. Funding institutions always look at history, not the future. And their decisions are based on that, maybe from previous performance or previous financial statements. They don't look in projections or the potential for business to grow. Most funding institutions, they lack understanding of environment where SMEs operate. You find that SME has been awarded the contract for 2 years. The funding institutions will take more than 9 months to tell the SME that the application is being unsuccessful or successful, and that's not helping. By the time SME receives the feedback from the funders, the contract has already been cancelled. No sense of urgency, lack of commitment from funding institutions. Due to lack of understanding, the funding institutions will offer the wrong product to SME. Easy, when you need working capital, you get revolving credit facility. Our company lost millions of rands through these practices. This is what IDC did to us, and we are in big crisis today, and our company is about to close down. Most financial institutions that are mandated to finance SMEs are run by people who never been entrepreneurs in their lifetime, and that is not helping. That is why you find that it is easy to get funding when you want to buy a business from the white-owned company as a BE partner. And that encourages fronting and destroys entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurs like to create. We like to create our new things and all that. Entrepreneurs like to create, not to take. So please support creators because that's where the jobs are created. Jobs are destroyed by not funding the SMEs. On a daily basis, SMEs are closing down due to no access to funding. Most SMEs are in survival mode. The reason being, because you're not getting funds from anywhere, then you'll borrow from your friends and to honor government contracts or orders, then the government department will take more than a year to pay. Example being our case with Houghton Shared Services Center, where they owe us money for more than a year, and the monies are still not paid. African black entrepreneurs are perceived as failures and associated with risk. That is why you find if you are a black and partnering with white-owned company, the chances are high of getting support than when black business partner with another black business. The new growth path will never succeed if SMEs are not supported. All previous strategies have failed because SMEs are not given a fair chance to air their views on matters that involve them. If it is true that our government intends to help to create 5 million jobs in the near future, the government focus must be on SME sector and first protect the existing jobs and create the new jobs. Conclusion. In closing, we believe SME sector can create jobs, add value, and make impact in our economy when doors of funding are opened. We also like to thank Mr. Ariko Kutse, Secretary of Portfolio Committee, for the job well done. Well done, my brother, for inviting people like ourselves. We didn't know that one day we're going to be close to this parliament, our parliament of ours. Many thanks, and may God Almighty continue to bless each one of you. And I thank you.
You must thank the president for creating this committee, this department and this committee. Thanks, Mr. Mokwena, for the presentation and also for the good and bad news that you just gave us about your company. is a typical example that we need to hear. Members, here is the presentation. Can we try it with it? Mr. Mare? Dr. Ravi? Mem Lai? That's out of the Mr. Kovaza?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for this presentation, for this honest presentation, because I think that is what we need, is really to find out from people in practice, in reality, how they experience and what do they need. Because often, you know, with the greatest respect to everybody else, yesterday, today, the departments, all the development finance institutions, that has got wonderful plans. And sometimes a paper is very... You know, you can write anything on paper and it will not complain and it will sound incredibly well. But the implementation and the practice, that is what is important. I'm particularly disturbed by what you have mentioned about the development finance institutions that we believe are there to specifically support businesses like yourself. And somehow I think we certainly need more information on how you went about to approach them. You know, was there proper business plans, for instance? Was it credible agents that you have used at that stage, or was it done by yourself? You know, why did they respond then negatively? Is it purely because you couldn't give them all the information because there was information lacking? Or was it because of security, or was it because your business plan didn't really spoke to them the way that you thought or that you interpret that? I think somehow I'm of the opinion that one need to keep businesses alive rather than see them going down and creating new ones, because that's not doing any good for anybody. Specifically on black economic empowerment, I think it's very important that we maybe get your view on that, specifically in terms of what has been announced yesterday, where it's envisioned a revision of the black economic empowerment, broad-based black economic empowerment principles, and how do you see your business featuring there? Because there's been so much criticism of narrow-based black economic empowerment that has got a bad name. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Mr. Mare. Dr. Ravi?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. McKenna. I think your very frank and honest submission. On page 5, I think you say your company lost millions of rands through the practices. I'd like to sort of, if you can give us more clarity on the practices and then so forth, do you have a turnaround strategy at the moment which will be able to identify why? I assume you've got a lack of working capital. I think you've mentioned it in your submission as well. But surely, Madam Chair, if you've got a record, you've been in existence since for something like 13 years now, almost 13 years. It saddens me that none of the well-known sort of funding agencies or that they are reluctant to assist you in your endeavor. I'd like to know what are the reasons why aren't they prepared to help you? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Ravi. Mem Lai?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I must really commend the presenter in this honest presentation that he's giving. And it's really disturbing to get presentations like this when we are having the TFIs to support our SMEs and to ensure that they are growing. My question will also be on page 3. I just want to know from the presenter, how do we think the DFIs can improve the way they are doing things to ensure that SMEs are getting funds. And the other one is also to on page 2, when they were audited for good manufacturing practices. Was this before they applied for funding from the DFIs or after? And on page 4 also, where the presenter mentioned that the funding institution is lacking the understanding in which the SMMEs are operating. Can you just explain what, in his view, what do we think that must be happening in that environment? Thank you.
Thank you, Mem Lai. Mr. Corozza.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I also want to echo my appreciation for this frank presentation. It does touch one's heart when you hear that there is such a potential for growth of an SME like this one, but they're just obstacles which could have easily been taken out of the way. Chair, I do want to understand, though, probably in the same vein as Mr. Marais, on page 3, slide 2, you make reference to applications for funding being turned down. And after a long time of waiting for that matter, which is itself very bad, have you been given any reasons why your applications have not been accepted? I raise this question because given the reason, you might have an opportunity to improve on the information that you give and therefore improve your application such that it is acceptable. Has there been that kind of interaction to say your application is not clear on 1 to 3, it lacks 1 to 3, therefore it's turned down? Secondly, on page 4, the top slide, paragraph 1, it's very worrying to hear that when you submit applications, you get the sense that it's not about the quality of your application, but it's about who you know. Do you have practical experiences of that kind of behavior of those to whom you submit your application? I think I'll go to page 8, Chairperson. Again, the top slide. Is this kind of perception that if you are a black entrepreneur, you are bound to fail and therefore a risk? From the commercial banks or from the government agencies which are supposed to fund, or both? And what do you think needs to be done to change this perception? Thank you.
Thanks, Professor.
You know, Comrade Chair, I didn't know that being squashed between these members of Parliament gives them permission to steal my questions. You know. Let me also say that indeed your presentation is touching the heart, but I want to find out whether you have made attempts to interact with public representatives? Because it is our duty, you know, as public representatives, to be available to yourselves when you meet frustrations, so that we can see whether it is us that have erred as public representatives, you know, that have failed you in terms of intervening, so that there can be lessons from that. But my second point is, maybe it's connected with my first point. Does it? Will you recommend a certain way of reaching us as public representatives? Maybe the standard procedure that we have is not adequate, so that if you do have a suggestion, if you can make it, so that we can explore it. And then the details of the applications that you made, can you be able to supply copies to us, but substantiate, so that even when we read a certain copy dated a certain date, we then, it's a follow-up to what one of or two of the members that have made, you know, so that we can understand properly and be able to engage with the department. And even where it depends on who you know, if you can expand, that will help us. And also, if you can also expand on who you don't know, you know, so that we see these versions properly. And then my last point is it possible that you people are not well organized as yourself and your peers across? Because sometimes when you are organized and then you speak as a group, we can understand you better. And I want to believe that you have a potential of creating huge and huge employment. Maybe even countrywide. I mean, if you open branches, if you can make a comment on that. And also, if you can comment whether in what you are doing, is there scope for cooperatives? Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Governor Bassa. Dr. Mukwena, what I said earlier on, when I started about you having being empowered through the close proximity of SASO, because I took it when I looked at your presentation, I took it that you were closer to SASO in both areas of your operation, that is Kwagwa and Mpumalanga, the Kunda. Have you perhaps approached them? Because having worked with them, it's very clear that they do have programs that they run to assist community, and you know, one of their policies to help people that are closer to them as part of their social responsibility. Have you perhaps worked with them, and perhaps it will be important also to hear what they're saying, so that perhaps you can also as a committee be able to judge from what you are saying, to judge them on the basis of what you are telling us. I also had a few questions because, as I indicated, you really have touched our hearts by what you said. We heard good and bad from you. The good part of it is the fact that you was excited when you said we secured lucrative contracts with Pick and Pay, with Gauteng shared services, obviously everybody would be excited that, oh, you have this. And you are employing about 35 people, and you have a potential of adding even 20 more. That on its own, it says you are a person who's, or a company that is very, very serious with what you're doing. And when I look at the type of business you're involved in, it's surely a business that is going to, that is needed in our communities and even within the big businesses. I had, before you continued to explain that you approached ITC, you approached Mega. Those who don't know, Mega is a Mpumalanga Economic Development Agency. You approached MEF and so forth and so forth, and you couldn't get assistance. Then I thought, no, the questions that followed after by my colleagues there do suffice, because I feel there should be something that is not going okay. It might be true that it's because of who you are, who you know, and who you rub your shoulders with. It might be that there's something that you are not doing correctly. Maybe it's important that we understand that, as my colleagues have said. We have ITC people here. Mr. Ntlogo is here. Ntlogo, I mean, is here. We'll be able to... let's wait, continue. I said, oh, here's another story, because we visited as a committee one area. I won't mention it by name. When we got there, you know, the response from the ITC person was like, these people buy a shoe, they don't know what they need, what they want, because we give them all the information. You know, if you have a senior person who's representing government talking like that, then you get worried as to whether our people, if they can talk, you know, in our presence, the way they have, they were saying, they were responding to community members. Then we thought, no, no, no. You know, we tried to call him to order, but he didn't see anything wrong. He was continuing and continuing. We thought, Jesus. Until we said to him, you know what? I think you are playing with your job. Maybe you've made so much money that you don't care anymore. But at least somebody else is waiting outside there who want that job and who can do a better job than what you're doing. Because when, you know, people who are working for government forget that they are given this job to help. They are agents of government. You don't sit in a cooler office there. You don't sit in a ITC office, SAMAF office, or department, or Department of DTI of Economic Development, or whichever department. You sit there and think that I'm working for myself. Now I've arrived. It doesn't matter who else is there. We don't. It's our responsibility to show them that their duty is to support government. We employ them, we pay them in exchange so that they can provide our people with what we promised to give to our people. So that is the difference. And I got worried, as you mentioned that, and I said, no, maybe we have a lot of people like that in our system that we must perhaps send a good message to them, because it seems like they are forgetting why they are where they are. But perhaps, as I said, it's from your side. It will be important, even if it's not now, but, you know, through submission, you give us all those details. We really need that, and would want to use that as an example. Thank you. Because what I've indicated here, I think, is what members have already alluded to. Now, that's why we call them here, so that we can hear and go and represent them fully. And I think you did a good job. Thank you. May you respond to the question, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable members. Our case is a long one, but I will try to make it short. In 2001, we were awarded a national contract to supply the whole country. And we applied then to IDC for 3 million rand working capital. Back then, IDC supported us with that 3 million rand, and that 3 million rand was supposed to be paid in 48 months. We managed to repay that money within 16 months. We were doing a turnover of about 2.6 million a month on the national basis. We used to have four factories. I used to have a factory here in Kilani Gardens in Cape Town. I used to have a factory in East London, and I used to have the other factory, the current one in Kwakwa. We used to have four factories. So in 2004, the contract came to an end, August 2004. So when that contract came to an end, we closed the factory in Cape Town and the one in East London. So 2005, we were having no work because, I mean, the contract had expired. The government was now buying on quotation basis. Then we went to retail shops like ShopRite, and they awarded us the contract to do their house brand. Then, because the relationship was good with IDC back then we went back to IDC and said, please help us, because we just secured this contract now to do ShopRite checkers. That was the house brand. Then, unfortunately, ShopRite was a bad payer. So they used to pay us in after 180 days, sometimes, if we are lucky, 90 days. And that caused some problems for us, right? So we started struggling to honor some of our payments to IDC. Then by that time, IDC gave us 2 million rand because we paid the 3 million rand within 16 months. So now we were in good books. Then they awarded 2 million rand to do ShopRite checkers contract. Then out of that 2 million rand, we managed to repay the 1 million rand. Then come 2006, the same contract that we used to turn 2.6 million rand a month was awarded back to us to supply all the state departments and all the other departments. So we went back to IDC and said, you know what, please help us with 1.5 million because now we just secured the contract that we know that we used to turn 2.6 million rand on. Then the IDC decided to give us the wrong money, the wrong product. They gave us the revolving credit facility. That was in 2006. 2 months later, for them to approve that, the contract was for 2 years. They came back after 9 months to tell us that they were not going to give us the working capital, but they will give us the revolving credit facility. Because we were desperate, we thought it can work. 2 months down the line, we went back to them, and remember, we lost an income of about 9 months because we were not supplying. We didn't have money to honor that contract. We only knew 9 months later that they will give us the credit revolving facility, and that was 9 months late. So that's where I'm coming up when we're talking about the millions of friends that we lost in that process, because the contract started. After submission, we waited for about 9 months to get approval. So at that time, we went back up 2 months after we got the facility. We went back to IDC and said, good people, please change this facility. It's not working for us. Please do as you did in 2001. Because we used to hold a stock of about 1.4 million at any given time in our factory premises. The reason being, when the order comes, you deliver the next day. So by so doing, you create the market for yourself. You give the consumer the chance to use your product. So by credit revolving facility, what it means is you don't have the money. You wait for the institution to place an order. Then you run to IDC. Then somebody who signed is not there. Therefore, cannot deliver. After maybe sometimes, if you're lucky, the transaction will be finalized in 12 days. for you to get the money. And you cannot create the stock to stay there because you only get the money for that particular order. Only. So we tried to convince them to change it. With no success. We even tried to secure appointment with Mr. Klinger. With no success. We even went to Mr. Mpashwa. But back then he was a former Minister of Trade and Industry, and IDC used to fall under DTI at that time. Then he assigned Mr. Lino in October to call Mr. Klinger, and after Mr. Lino in October called the Mr. Jeffrey Klinger back then the consultants were appointed to come to our factory to see if it is true that the facility needed to be changed. Then the consultant took about, say, six weeks. They came up with the report to say, yes, it is true, you gave them the wrong product. Then we went together with the consultant to present the report to IDC. The IDC didn't do anything about that report. They said they cannot change it. The decision was taken and is taken. So then we decided out of that 1.5, we said, okay, because we can see we're not going to be able to repay the 1.5. So by that time when the report was completed, we only used half of 1.5 million. We said, please keep your 750 because we see we're not going to be able to repay because of this type of funding. Because, you know, in our industry, you make money on volumes. You don't make money on the unit. You make, the more you deliver, the more you make your money. So we said, okay, we'd rather hold, return the one, the 750, not to use it. Then we said to please change it or keep the 750. Then our reputation, you know, was at stake. We lost that contract. That contract we lost, and that's the contract that we used to turn 2.6 million a month down the tubes. 2007, we went to Pick and Pay because now we're no more in good books. With our client that knows us better, then we went to Pick and Pay, and Pick and Pay, they asked us about whether we comply our product is SABS. They found that our product is SABS. They came to do our the due diligence, our plan to find that we have the good manufacturing practice audit, and they find that we comply in every way. Then they give us an opportunity to supply all their stores. That was in 2007. Towards the end of 2007. 2008, we went back to IDC and said, you know what, you spoiled our business. Please help us on this one. Because remember, we can't. When we go to the NEF, they want the security that IDC has. And IDC doesn't want to give it to them. When we go to MEGA, they want the business plan. After they've done their due diligence, they want the security, and the security is held by IDC. So we went to FDC as the same thing. IDC doesn't want to release the security. And at the same time, they don't want to help. So, last year, October, I made an attempt to meet with Mr. Jeffrey Klinger. Lucky we managed to meet, and he made the commitment to help. Then, unfortunately, he still had to go down to the people who really work, you know, the practitioners. Then they came up with the offer. They said, okay, come with a settlement offer, then we part ways. And they wanted me to pay the 700,000 within a month so that I can get my securities back. So unfortunately, I couldn't raise the 700. Now nobody's willing to fund my business because I don't have securities, all the securities of the IDC, and at the same time, IDC doesn't want to help. It's not an issue of business application. I mean, the business itself, we complain every way. We currently, as we speak, we're currently implementing the ISO 9000. We have engineers in our factories. You know, in terms of skills, there's no skills problems and everything. We have been doing this for some time. We know what we're doing. The only challenge is we need people who can really buy into our idea and just invest into our business. The issue of being organized as business so that we can have voice, one of the questions. It is not easy to get together because We have seen so many institutions, you name them, the NAFCOGs and all that. It's more of a get-together thing. You don't really get the value that one would like to have. You know, so it's like talk. That doesn't really take us anywhere. So I personally tried. I'm convinced that I've met all the people who I thought they will be able to change our situation, but with no success. In terms of the perception of black entrepreneurs being failures, that is true, and I know most people here will really share the same sentiments with me, because, I mean, when you go to funding institutions, you see the way they look at you, and you see the same pattern when you say, okay, what if I buy this business? They would like to know which business are you buying. Then you can see there is interest, because now you're trying to buy a white man's business. And they will try to dip into it to find, I mean, what is the price, you know, all those things. And that, to me, it doesn't really encourage entrepreneurship. That, you know, it's only, I mean, it encourages fronting. That's why black people are fronting for white people. All every day, that's what is happening. Because the government encourage it, but they don't see. So that's the problem, one. Okay, the other question being, the issue of you know. I've seen businesses that doesn't have really, that you can even see that it's not sustainable, but getting funding. You know, you ask yourself, how did this person got the funding? Whilst I have this contract. I mean, you know, when you got the contract to supply for life, like in Pick and Pay, for instance, it doesn't have an expiry date. For somebody who's business-minded will say, this is an opportunity, because it doesn't have the expiry date. It's not like a contract for 2 years. You know, you will think that, I mean, the funding institution will like to hear that, the point of sustainability. But it's not an issue, because there are some people who just get the money, you know, with something that you can see, it will just die in 2-3 months, but you still get funding. You know, it depends on who you know. That's what I was trying to stress on that issue. On the issue of the BEE, I think that was a big mistake that our government did. They were supposed to keep the air. You know, before in 1998 when we started, they used to have this thing of HDI, historically disadvantaged individuals. They used to encourage the entrepreneurship in that way, because we used to get all these opportunities because they were looking at who runs those businesses. Then in 2002, here comes this thing of BEE, whereby now we had to compete with the Unilevers of this world, claiming that they are also BEE compliant, whereby they're using only two people to front, and who even doesn't have even time to be on those businesses. And that kills the SMEs, because you find that the rich man can just buy into a white man's business because it's easy to get that kind of money. Then he doesn't even have the chance to go and visit those businesses. So in the real true sense, you're only empowering few, you leave the majority. So where we come from, at the time of former President Mbeki, he declared that Gogo was declared as the area that needs special attention for development. 65% of people there are unemployed. So we're doing our best there, trying to help to create jobs, but our funding institution doesn't see that we're trying our best. In terms of how can the funding institutions be improved, I believe it's all about loving, to have love for people, you know. In most cases, you find that, you know, if I hate myself, that's a thing of self-hate. You know, you find that, I mean, especially in all these offices, you find our own brothers and sisters. Who you think they will be able to help? But forget it. Those are the people who will hold you down, that will make sure that, I mean, you not succeed. So that's, I think it's about perception that, you know, when we take chance with this company, it's going to fail anyway. So what about my merit? What about my my bonuses? So it's not, I mean, they don't really think. But if I'm a black person really having money, I mean, if I want to buy from a white man, I will get funding, I will say, in 2-3 days' time. Because they see the risk is lower because there is a white man in that business. So where to now if we have people who doesn't really have love for their own brothers? You know, because I think it's about a change of heart. It's all up in here. If we don't love your own brothers, we're going nowhere. And on the issue of environment, where I said the funding institutions, they don't know they don't really know the environment where we operate. It is true, because you'll find the questions that they ask you that are sometimes irrelevant in terms of what you basically do. So in the sense, what I'm trying to say here, I mean, why they awarded the revolving credit facility in the first place, knowing that we only need the working capital. So it's a lack of knowledge in terms of where do we really make money. They don't really have the clue in terms of our industry, you know, because we don't really make money on units. We make money on the volumes that we push. So those were the things that they didn't know. I believe that if maybe they were aware that the only secret for us to make money is when we push volumes, maybe they should have taken a different approach in terms of making that kind of wrong decision. And the other thing, they are not prepared to listen. They rely more on consultants, and they don't. So sometimes they don't even listen to those consultants that they appoint. IDC paid that person, the consultant was earning more than 960 per hour. So they got, I think, more than 100,000 after the 6 weeks, and they didn't even listen to that report that came from those consultants. So it's difficult to advise people who are not really willing to listen sometimes. So in terms of the scope for cooperatives, yes, we are willing and more than willing to work with people who really can add value into our venture. Because, I mean, for us, it's not about us anymore. It's about what we do for others. But unfortunately, if we don't have resources, we are just nobodies. We can't really change the our course. And in the issue of interaction with public representatives, like I've mentioned, I met all the people who I think. This is the only last platform. And that's why I was congratulating Mr. Ariko, because I didn't even believe that I would be having an opportunity like this whereby, and even when the next day close the business, but you know that, you know what, I've been to the highest parliament in land, you know, whereby I think the decisions are taken, you know. So at least for me, that comforts me and say, you know what, and even when the doors are closed, I know that I've done my best in terms of trying to interact with all the people who I think they can make a decision in terms of our cause. I don't know if there's any other one, but I believe that I've tried to cover some of the questions that were asked, and I thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mokoena. You know of any public representatives in Secunda, MPs, the constituency offices, people who may have taken this matter seriously? That's what the question was saying. Because sometimes you confine yourself maybe to premiers, to MECs, and forget that there are MPs within, even MPLs, who are supposed to be taking this, your issues.
Yeah, okay. Like I've mentioned, madam, the issue is, I believe that the MPs doesn't really have power to really talk the way we expect them to talk with these funding institutions. It looks like the CEOs of all these funding institutions are like independent of some sort. You see the way they are treated. You see that, I mean, they are really, you know, on their own thing. With Mega, for instance, I met the CEO. And even I've tried to meet, I even met with the MEC of Economic Development, but nothing came out. You can see, I mean, they have the powers to make their calls.
Maybe we need to use this opportunity to educate you also on that, because it's not true. MPs have more powers. We must separate between government and parliament. There are three There are three arms of the state. Organs, that's the word I was looking for. Organs of state. There's judiciary, there's executive. Executive is what is mostly referred to as government. And there's parliament, the legislature, which are your this parliament, the nine legislators, the NCOP. Those are your legislatures. South Africa's model of state model is based on its parliamentary, which is the most powerizing parliament than in any other. That is why the Constitution gives Parliament authority over government. Government, executive has to report to Parliament. That is why we have established constituency offices in every province. In those constituency offices, you'll find councillors. Now we never used to have councillors. But because it's a sphere of government also, we needed to take care of it. You have that, you have MPLs, that is members of the legislature, and then you have MPs, members of this parliament. All of us belong to a particular constituency, whether it's DA, whether it's ANC, whether it's Freedom Front or Minority Party or whatever, they all have. So they represent your views, those members, irrespective of party affiliation. So it's very important that you understand that. Otherwise, you'll have this perception that Abo Alex Nabo Babu Lentoman Chinkego are above us. They're not. They report to us. We question them. And they do implement. I'll give you an example. We said to Kula, you are not known. We don't see you. We took them along when we went to various areas. And we said to them, here, listen to people. We called a meeting, public meeting. We wanted them to respond to questions as they were asked by those community members. And through those public meetings, we were able then to instruct them what to do. If you look at your newspapers nowadays, you'll see that Kula is showcasing their, you know, the work that they're doing. And when you read those papers, they'll tell you this, this from this company, and I'm being financed by Kula, and this is what. That's the showcasing, because we said, because people don't know you, begin to do something, and they listen to us. So that's why I'm saying this is a powerful place. Otherwise, we wouldn't be calling you. We don't want a talk show. We call people because we want to improve, we want to better the lives of people. If you heard the minister say that we needed partnerships, it's not the first call by the Minister of Economic Development. It's a call that has been there for years. We want to practicalize that. That's why there's this ministry now that has been established of economic development so that we can have a proper focus, unlike before where economic development issues were fragmented. Now we want a global view and a global response so that you can respond to every aspect of the issues that otherwise wouldn't have called you. That's why we called you, and we hope that you will have faith in the MPs and MPLs that are there. they have enormous power and utilize them. Yes, thank you very much. Members, I think due to time constraints, I think we have to move on. Thank you very much. I think you still remember that you should give us the case, even though you illustrated the challenge, but do bring us that, and then we want to engage ITC. We do meet with the ITC, and it is an industrial development corporation, and they must ensure that industries grow. And with more focus on the previously disadvantaged, because those previously are still disadvantaged, even if we are saying previously. When we say previously, we mean before 94, but they're still disadvantaged. So we want them to come and account to us on that. So thank you very much. We'll await your documentation. May we move forward by requesting that we... Yes. By requesting that Mr. Shaw come back for questions, because we now have your full document. Members, I take it that you noted your questions. I'm noting that Mabasa, Mem Line, Babu Kwabaza, Mr. Mare and Dr. Rabi.
Correct, Chair, thank you very much. I think the input was made from a relatively unique angle, which I appreciate, and but there is a difference between a presentation on paper and the outcomes, you know, where we can say the presentation that was made, when we really go down on the ground, if we do pay an oversight visit, we find we can see that the two tally. Most of the time, the presentation is wonderful, but when we go there, we find zero. So my question is, these stakeholders that you have spoken of at community levels, are they as empowered as... your presentation indicates? That's one question. The second question is, in terms of empowerment, in terms of the knowledge, is the knowledge widespread within that community? Because there is also a threat where you find that something valuable is there, but the knowledge is located within one or two people. Should it happen that those two people go for greener pastures, then you find the whole thing collapses. So, thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mabasa. Namla.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I don't know, but... I don't understand this presentation, but let me start with page 2, the SME access to funding. There are 5 bullets that is mentioned here, that is highlighted here. I just want to know from the presenter that if this is the challenges that SMMEs are experiencing to access funding, what is the best, maybe your best way to put in place so that it becomes easier for SMMEs to get funding? And this slide 3, please bear with me because I'm not a financial expert, but can the presenter just explain what is the relevance of this slide in order for us to know that small businesses could also dream about this turnaround? And the possible solutions are to improve SMMEs sustainability. That first paragraph, where the presenter mentioned that reconfigure or design innovative frame breaking system solutions that will enable SMMEs to effectively cooperate and what. It doesn't say much for us to recognize that this is what SMMEs really need. So if the presenter can really expand on that also. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Ms. Lai. Mr. Kovasa?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I, in the same vein as line, the slide that talks to the SMME access to funding, those five bullets. I do want to understand, do you mean to, are you suggesting that for the SMME to access funding, it must satisfy those five bullets? And if it is so, how do you then to measure that these bullets are satisfied? For an SMME which is completely starting and it's only been created, it hasn't done any piece of work to prove that all of these things. What do you do on what are you suggesting on that? Thirdly, the fourth bullet, where you speak of consumer awareness and loyalty. Could you explain further what do you mean by? I assume when you talk of consumer awareness, you are referring to the ability of that SMME to market itself. But how do you then assist that SMME to advance to the extent that the consumers are loyal to that SMME and therefore will always consume that particular product? Secondly, Chairperson, on I think it's page 4 of your earlier document, bullet number 2, where you refer to consumer ignorance and apathy towards social development agencies. It's almost similar to the bullet I was referring to earlier on. But I want to understand what do you mean. Are you saying that as government and as business, we have not spoken loud enough, we have not spoken extensively enough for consumers to be aware of existing businesses, small businesses in their communities, so that they will then support them? And therefore be part of the social development agenda that you're referring to. So that we also begin to understand ourselves. Probably we keep on being locked up in the boardrooms like we do, and we're not going out enough. And therefore people don't have this kind of sense of, shall I say, sense of ownership of these SMMEs in their localities and therefore support them. Lastly, Chair, let me stop at that. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. To a large extent, a lot of my what I want to ask has already been addressed, so I will not try to repeat that. Mine is just on the challenges that you've mentioned, the same page that my colleague has referred to now, where you've mentioned challenges. On the next page, you have give possible solutions, but it's not necessarily direct relating to those challenges that you've mentioned. And again, maybe one must come back to practice and reality, implementation, to say, you know, what is it that you really would like us to do, government to do, the department to do, in order to address those challenges? Because it's one thing of mentioning it, but it's another thing of really getting to grips with, you know, what is the expectation? What actually needs to be done and who needs to do that? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Marin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, first and foremost, just one comment. The retail sector is very specialized, and I don't think it's really fair. I mean, the competition is not really fair. You mentioned ShopRite Holdings, USave, and so forth. My experience is that consumers invariably vote, or the prices determine where they buy. I mean, that's the bottom line. I'd like to know whether this particular model, you've cited the example of Guguletu, are you thinking of expanding this particular model then? And then second, profit-wise, Madam Chair, what is your stock turnover? Is it per month? What would you say? How many days is your stock turnover? Because stock is very important for any small business, for them to be viable or not viable. And then do you provide credit for this particular model? Because that's often the kiss of death to many small businesses, because people, your creditors period invariably destroy your profits and so forth. And then your debtors period as well. I'd like to have your views on that as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Rabe. Yeah. Those are the questions from members for clarity. Who is this Mobicom? Who is Mobicom? I think that's why members are quite confused, with where you started. I was also not sure of what you were presenting to us until you came to the slides that I said you must add, because at least they began to give an idea of where you were heading to. Just tell us about yourself, and it will be important also to include, because if you want the model to be accepted and be supported for the betterment of the lives of the people, especially the poorest of the poor, because you are dealing here in terms of your proposals with the cooperative, you have what you call primary and secondary cooperatives. Just want to understand what exactly are you talking about, and so that even the DFIs that are here can understand, because they're in a process now of developing funding models that will work for our communities. May I hand over to Mr. Shaw?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I much appreciate it. Okay, I'm going to address the questions as they were posed to me. And the first one is very simple. The stakeholder and community level
Now, I need to put it to the committee that that is probably the most important aspect of any model that you put in communities, is stakeholder involvement and buy-in. And as such, as I indicated to you, that we went a great length to secure the support of structures such as SANCO, such as the Western Cape, various traditional leaders, Khalicha Empowerment, etc., in various areas where we are discussing and educating the people, because we're creating a model for the people. Okay? It's a very focused approach whereby what we are doing is the people form the cooperatives. They decide who's working in the cooperative. Mamas, they go around and they canvass the members. When they canvass the members, they must, because members must be able to cooperate and be able to work together. Okay, it's not a solution that okay. My responsibility from a Mobicom perspective and the structure that Mobicom provide to them is just to educate them. They run the business, they conduct the business. So I do have people representing, and it's not window dressing, they're sitting here next to me, which you can pose a question yourself and ask, are they empowered? How do they work? Last night we had the education session. Every week we've got education sessions at night at schools where we teach the people exactly what is happening, where is the money going, how much of the money is going to corporate. I think yesterday there was a question in respect of the whole big malls, etc., etc. I don't want to go into that. So we are educating the people in respect of exactly how much power they have as a collective versus the individual. Okay. Regarding the knowledge, whether it's widespread or in the community, that's a very, very important question, because you will find people running with an idea and then the others get left behind. And that's why we work with structures. Okay. So structures will take it. It's not a one individual show. Okay. I think to a certain extent then, the best way to put in place the question regarding, yes, my synopsis on page 2 was a very straight shooting synopsis indicating that if you wanted to be seen to get funding, I think the previous gentleman exactly elaborated to that point, that there is unrealistic expectations on SMEs to get funding. So I am just saying, if you want to get funding, that is my slide 2 was highlighting the various criteria, business criteria, which funders will evaluate when they look at you to decide to what extent. The mindset is very much focused on a Western business functional efficiency perspective. You'll see the questions I got here. One of the last questions was also, and I will address it from that perspective as well. The fundamental situation is, it is based on the principle. It is based on the principle of a value proposition from a supplier to a distributor. And that is a typical business model of a value chain of the retail. That is true. It's absolutely true. I don't have anything against the value chain. I do not have anything against the company. All I want our people to understand is what power is in such a value chain and what are they giving away if they don't understand the power of that value chain. That's the only thing I'm saying. Okay. So I wasn't trying, in other words, to summarize. Slide 2, I must say there was 2 other documents that went with it. It's not only this one. There was a document, a 4-pager plus in another. So you only got a part of it. That's why you're so confused. I apologize for it. Okay, good. Where the model is elaborated in detail, exactly how we train, how much we train, because you can't even run this, you can't deploy the model if there's no training. But I will come back to that later. The relevance of slide 3. Let me explain to you. The relevance of
3 minutes left.
The relevance of slide 3 is very simple. I just wanted to highlight the power of a very good value chain. Now, the fact of the matter is, if we look at the consumer spend is constituting 60% of our GDP. If consumer spend is not spread and it came back into the communities, the point ultimately of any business is to get dividend payouts to the shareholders. Now, no economy can take over a period of 3 years an extraction of 3 billion rand to 20 to 25 institutions which hold 2.5% or more of the shares in such a company. That's the point I'm making. So we are putting money into a system and it's a vacuum cleaner. And that's the point I was trying to make. And that is where I'm trying to show we must do something different. Okay. Okay, I'm better now. Regarding the question, I mean, to a certain extent, in order, yes, that is possible. Regarding the question on access to funding for SMEs to access satisfy those, yeah, I think to a certain extent, they can be. The question was, do SMEs need to satisfy those criteria? Yes. And I think that is the problem. The solution. The solution is very simple. That we need to empower the SMEs in communities because communities must form a cohesiveness. The community has the spending power, not the individual. Whether you are a website designer, whether you are a small media production house, that in respect of working in conjunction with the spend. Because if we take, very simple, Khayelitsha. Khayelitsha, 790,000 people. Each person spending 10 rand per day. Calculate the power spent on staple food alone, 300 million, and is, any point in time, in circulation. The point we're trying to make is there is enough money. We must understand how the communities can, through SME structures on a backbone of infrastructure, can be incubated to get a fair share of that. Okay? To continue, consumer awareness, absolutely. This is probably the most important point of the whole presentation. A point I'm trying to make is that very simple, it is not due to ignorance. The people have never been educated. They don't understand what is their power of their money. Okay. They understand, yes, it's a market function. It is a market function. If you're born up and you're bred and you understand the principles of, this is a good price. It's a good value offering. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. It's an extremely good value offering, but it comes at a price. And the price is your independence. Okay.
Was your timer.
Okay.
That your time is up.
2 minutes?
No, I can give you a minute.
Okay. Good. Yeah. I think to a certain extent, challenges from our side, very simple, that yes, we believe that there must be a serious campaign from all parties in communities to educate the consumer. The consumer is a household. To educate the consumer in respect of how powerful they are. And that's what we do through structures. We've got various structures running there. We educate them. What is happening? Why are they poor? What is systemic poverty? Let them understand the big picture. You can't give this person a part of the resolution. You must understand. Otherwise, you're not going to change his behavior. You need to change behavior. I think. And then fact turn over. And this is very simple. The principle is on. We're not a retail model. Okay? We move basic staple 3 times, 4 times. 15th, we're going to get paid. The 26th, 29th, and the 4th. The fact of the matter is, there is institutional funders that's providing for that moment, for that day, agents' capital. They get the working capital. They get the orders from the consumer. They satisfy the consumer the order. The stock is being delivered through the structures and it out. So it's not a formal retail. It will never work. Okay. It is just to get the consumer aware to the fact that there is an alternative.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll give another minute to yourself if you wanted to say something.
Yeah.
Just a minute on the retail model.
Okay.
Ngakhuluma baba. Noma ngabe uyafuna ukukhuluma khuluma I South Africa ina 11 languages.
Okay, basically, I think our point is, coming back to the question of a value chain stuff, where everything is been built and involved around the consumer. Because alternative to that, in addition to the awareness that we have created and also the service that you want to bring into the consumer, and other additional, because now the consumer, they will go in with the taxi and buy in the glossary, but now we have pushing the agent, and that agent is there to make sure that it educates the consumer, but at the same time, it gives a proper service, especially additional, it's a consultative service. And we know that, and again, the job, it has been created. And again, in terms of turning... No. Okay, basically...
What are you talking about?
Okay.
In your case, let's say you are in a business cycle.
Okay. In our case, basically, we've got a supplier. In fact, we're encouraging the community to have the buying power first. And where we use one account. And with that one account, we are in a position to negotiate for prices. And then we can remove other rebates that maybe the commercial or the consumer now is paying to other commercial stores. Now we are removing those rebates. And then at the same time, we are saying that to the consumer, look, form cooperatives, and once you form cooperatives, in terms of the shareholders, what to call returns, you are the one who benefits out of that, instead of other people benefiting out of that. Because remember, if Bugulet, you've got about 100,000 people, and then they are spending about 10 rand a day, and that's the enough money that it can be plowed back to the community of Kokuletu. So by that model, I mean, if you go back, for instance, I'll just make an example, you know, in olden days, you know, it's Mr. Nduli. Mr. Nduli, it means that it's a dust. And that it was derived because he owns a head of cattle, and then people from the village, they can see, because when it comes, because they can see the dust. And then that's how. And it was measured by the head of cattle that he owns. But what I'm saying that you are not reinventing the wheel here. We are saying that, okay, the foundations here are destroyed. Now we want to go back to the foundations, and then the foundations have to be remodeled, you know, so that it suits the needs of our people about the modern technology of today. And where everything it is, I mean, now the directives will come from up, and there's that discussion, and there's a lot of elimination in the whole game. But what we are saying that give power to the people, because at the end of the day, I think that's what we are fighting for. Give power to the people, and the only way to give power to the people is to make sure that there is enough support. And that support, it is a financial matter, because it takes cash to care.
Okay, you're right. You covered. Okay. Thank you. Unfortunately, we are really running out of our time. I think we've heard you. We do understand what you're saying. We were a bit confused, I must say, from the chair's point of view. I was confused a bit, but as you clarified, it makes sense. Thank you very much for the presentation. We have now, we'll go back to Africa Empowered. There's the old Babu Kaba here. Over to you, Babu. Oh, can we get just 2 minutes comfort break? I can see. Are you fine? You need it. 2 minutes comfort break. Yes. Just 2 minutes. Yes, we don't have time, but please, 2 minutes. I'm giving you just 2 minutes because I know there are people who need that now. I'm going to time that 2 minutes. Stretch and 2 minutes. Oh. Bye, Anthony. Bye, Thomas. Can't you bang the microphone then? Yeah. Absolutely not. Could you do all that?
It's like a buying stock, you know, when we were growing up in Tatsuka, you buy it in Tatsuka, but they are using retail. You know, it's a model that was developed in India.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Social, this idea of social entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
But it's just that the way they are.
Yeah, it's training is so.
I don't know. It makes sense. No, without this, I was like, it was going to be there and there.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how it works.
But, so you recommend that you go there?
Yeah, I'm beginning to understand. It's a model that was used in India.
Mm.
That led even to the development of this big bank.
Yeah. No, we saw something because there are, I think it's a minister, Chogoti Jisa then. 2 minutes done? Chogoti Jisa then went to it here.
Yeah.
Was it in public works, yeah?
So I think they're trying to implement it, but the way they explain it is so.
No, I think he really confused us.
Oh, it's lost a bit, is it?
Ariko? Yeah, I was thinking for people because I could see that they are getting tired. Now they mustn't. Can you call them in, please? 2 minutes is done now. Hey, it's all. Oh, I'm so tired.
Yeah,
it was even more for me. Only three, you know, I drove from last grade. I reached Eland to sort around 12, ne? On Monday. I woke up 3 o'clock to catch the 6 o'clock flight. So I basically slept for 3 hours, and I had a very involved day at Monday. So it's all been here for Lala Monday. I think I'm going to sometimes I was just looking down. Mang Pumalapa. Kuya. And funny enough, when you get home, it's so weird. I need to mind it. I need to switch it. No, I need to switch up from that mode. You will late. Uzamaglala early now. It takes time. Oh, you came today. Thank you. You wouldn't. Is there? And actually, it's a very good networking. If other people were like you, because I've seen even Mr. Mukwena was here yesterday and is here today. So it's a way of networking too. It's an opportunity to network. So that's, I really don't understand this message. Exactly, that would help him a lot. Yeah. Okay. Even the secretary is not here. Come, Bizema. Awuzombambela mina siqale because there's no ubabize siqale. Yes.
Okay.
arrived as they talked. Just to note important issues that there's a tape here. I don't know whether he stopped it or not. Yeah, I think it's on. Are those people coming? Even members are not there.
God.
I'm going to take your lunch time, you know, because I said 2 minutes, members.
But the whippers said to us, don't bother
about it. Is it?
Yes.
So I'm going to take up your lunch time, and I'm even offering you lunch. I don't know what is it doing here. Sorry about that. Okay, I think we need to continue now with the next presentation, Africa Empowered. You may continue, but
okay. First and foremost, I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me this opportunity to present to you. Madam Chair, much appreciated. Before I can start, I just want to give a little bit of a background. My expertise is not in the field of work that I'm currently in at the moment. I qualified as a chartered accountant last year in December, and I decided, based on the topical issues that were centered around BEE and around what issues people are voicing out, I took a stern decision to put my time into this initiative called Africa Empowered. It's a non-profit organization that was started 2 years ago, which is focusing really on creating awareness on why people need to know the fact that we are entitled to be empowered in every sphere of the world. And before we even tackle the issues of access to finance and what problems people have with black economic empowerment, we decided as an organization that we will sort of go back to the real reason why it was identified that empowerment is needed. And based on that, we sat with the Honorable President Jacob Zuma and tapped into his thinking and found out exactly how we can craft sort of a blueprint that we as an organization can work off, and you know, in order to create a much more sustainable change. And based on that, we came up with this picture that shows the journey of how people were basically trapped below at the bottom in the well of poverty, and how they gradually make progress to gain economic empowerment, which is the process that we are on at the moment, and how through gaining economic empowerment they can be able to, on a you know, full stomach and without worrying about hunger, tap into political empowerment, because now they are more informed, they are more confident, and have more self-esteem to voice out their opinions, and it speaks more as well to social empowerment, where they can now actively engage in the community and find out exactly what issues are sort of you know, putting back the community from succeeding, and they also can gain mental empowerment and spiritual empowerment. And so in crafting this kind of blueprint, it is sort of the hymn book that we sing from as Africa Empowered. And in introducing Africa Empowered even further, we started off with a campaign called the Air to Song LBE campaign, where we went around the country to all the 8 provinces, the 9th one being done today, they are currently in Mpumalanga, to basically find out what is it that people really are grappling with in terms of BEE. Why are they saying that it's not working, and what are the issues? And so I'm just going to play you a little video of all the footages that we captured throughout the provinces. Apologies, I'm just experiencing a bit of a problem with sound. Nothing. Okay. Maybe then I'll just skip the video and I'll just explain further. Basically, the video captured the different workshops that we did around the country, whereby we mobilized members of the community in partnership with the DTI, as well as the National Empowerment Fund. The campaign was endorsed by the DTI and funded by the National Empowerment Fund, whereby through these workshops, we provided individuals with templates in terms of them explaining to us what are the past pains that, and past and current pains that people are experiencing with BEE, and what are the future gains and possible future gains that people can sort of identify with that they think will be able to fast-track this empowerment process, this transformational process that we are currently grappling with in South Africa. And it would be interesting to find that the issues that are raised in the rural areas are so completely different to the issues that are raised in the urban areas. In the rural areas, they speak to more basic needs, like we need access to water, we need access to basic food, we need access to electricity. We need access to basic things that can capacitate us to be dignified as humans. Whereas in the more urban areas, they speak to more, they're more educated, they speak to more issues like access to finance. They want access to opportunities to start their own businesses. And so it was quite interesting to come across such views. And what we did as Africa Empowered, excuse me, we took all of those views and we analyzed them and we came up with the top 10 pains that people have faced with BEE, and we also came up with the top 10 gains that people would like to see in future helping out in BEE. And based on that, we have decided to come up with programs to put them in place to make sure that whatever issues people have raised, we basically filter down solutions to them and provide a link really between the corporate authority and corporate and government authority, and sort of become that catalyst in terms of resolving whatever issues that people at the ground are facing. Because it would appear to us that people at the grassroots level, the real, true intended beneficiaries of BEE, tend to be passed by these opportunities, and they don't have resources and the recourse to be able to provide sustainable solutions for themselves. And so in terms of the research methodology, we conducted the workshops and gave people templates and collected all of those templates and analyzed them and basically came up with recommendations that we thought as an organization would speak to the programs that are necessary at those communities. And in terms of the national findings, we consolidated all the findings that we made and we came up to the conclusion that at number 10, we had fronting as the most as a very prevalent issue in terms of blocking people from succeeding in terms of companies. I'm sure it's been raised quite a number of times. Even the gentleman that presented now raised it as well. And we came to the also conclusion that there's no support for businesses, and it's a classic case in point that we just saw with gentlemen now. And people feel also that a few people are benefiting from BEE. There's nepotism. Nobody is getting access to any of these opportunities. But one of the more prevalent issues is delays in payment in terms of whether it be from government or whether it be from the private sector. And it would appear that some of these issues that I've raised here have been raised by the gentleman that feels that the system has failed him. We have as well that there's no opportunities that are being communicated to the people, and there's a lot of decentralized communities that do not feel that information is being filtered down to them. And there's corruption as well. They feel that there's corruption in government departments and in funding institutions as well. They feel that nepotism also blocks people from accessing opportunities and from accessing any form of support that they sort of feel that they're entitled to.
And at number three, you can see as we go down, we speaking more to the real issues that people, that block people from starting any form of business or even sustaining their businesses. We're speaking to also skills development and training, that there's not, they feel that there's not enough of that being done. And I'd like to believe that it's not that there's not enough being done about that, but this kind of issue was raised more by people at the rural areas. They do not have the information in terms of where are these trainings happening, how do we get access to these trainings, and we find that people don't have even money, taxi money, to go to town to attend such trainings, to get informed. And we also have access to information. And at the core of the issues that we raised is what we hear about today, which is access to finance. And so we are saying as Africa Empowered, here are these issues that people have raised. What is it that we can do as a non-profit organization? And I'd like to just elaborate further that we are not of the notion that we need to be taking handouts and funding this particular organization, but we'd like to see ourselves more as a social enterprise, an enterprise that raises money and creates sustainable ways of making sure that the mandate of the organization continues. And so, just in summary, out of all the 2,994 mentions of any issues that were raised, we see that access to finances number has 297 mentions. And we're basically saying that it highlights the importance and the urgency of why SMMEs need to be sort of capacitated to grow and in terms of trying to fast-track the solutions that are needed for addressing some of the social development problems that we have in this country. And just to give you some of the gains as well, that they said, if BEE were to work, then this is, these are all the issues that we would want to see as well. And so we basically, and the people at the grassroots, came up with solutions to say, recommendations rather, to say, with regards to payment delays, what is it, some of these slides are also not included. I apologize greatly for that. Okay. The recommendations basically said that with payment delays, we would like an independent higher authority to monitor government institutions, to monitor DFIs or any other institution that is basically responsible for paying service providers, because it's one of the most prevalent issues why businesses fail today, is because you find that a company, just like an example case in point, you do have all the contracts and you have all the necessary expertise and skills, but why are you not being supported in terms of your payments being made on time? And I think, Madam Chair, I'd like to really express my emphasis on this particular matter to say payment delays is one of the most prevalent issues that's killing SMMEs today. And if it's not addressed soon, we will find ourselves going in circles trying to establish SMMEs from scratch over and over again. And as well, you know, measures need to be put in place to discipline whoever is in charge of making those particular payments or whoever is delaying processes in order to make those particular payments to people. Because, I mean, it's practical solutions that take place every day that kill businesses. And we have the with fronting, if we can introduce a much more rigorous rating process, and if it's possible to revisit the codes and just to see what is it that can be done to make sure that whatever BEE rating agencies are there, you know, they actually do the actual job that they're required to do. Because you find that some of them just issue certificates to get money, and it kills that particular company that's being rated, because the so-called DE beneficiary is not really benefiting from that. And it's being, that certificate is sort of a golden sort of paper that is given to government to say, I'm BEE compliant by a certain company, whereas the intended beneficiary is suffering, is not getting the full value, is not capturing the full value out of his affiliation with that particular company. And then another one is that this picture would basically say that somebody is getting a whole lot of papers and application documents to fill out. And because they have not been educated about how to fill out those processes, there haven't been enough workshops attended. Or you find that it's somebody from, you know, Enkandla or somebody from Mthatha that doesn't have the necessary information centers to go to in order to be educated about such, gets given a book of documentation. They fill it out, but they don't really know what they're filling out. There's no support. There's no mentoring. They take that very documentation to apply, and needless to say, the application is declined. And over and above that, whoever's declining the application does not go a step further to say, hang on, why did you, let me explain to you why your application was declined, and let me provide certain possible solutions as to how you can be helped and be capacitated to be able to fill out a much more, how do I put it, and to fill out documentation that will increase the chances of you getting whatever resource that you're trying to apply for. And that is also one of the most prevalent issues around, to say it's not that there's no money. There is money. The government is doing a lot. They're doing everything they can to put money out there for people to access. But it's the processes that frustrate that particular, that ability of people getting the money. Okay. And then the other recommendation would have been as well to say there's no access to information, but now the community itself, you know, it was, I wish I could have played you the video to see how aggressive people started becoming in terms of being concerned about them being forgotten, that, you know, we at the rural areas are being forgotten about. Everything happens in the cities where there's Lani, facilities for you guys to be trained. What about us? In our areas, there's not even community centers that can, you know, help us understand what it is that we need to do. And some of them, even in the video, express that we don't even know what BEE is. We don't know how we can benefit. We don't know what it is, how to access opportunities based on that. And it is these very little outcries that can sort of, you know, snowball into huge effects in terms of people deciding to ultimately lose hope in terms of starting businesses, in terms of trying to stand up and, you know, uplifting their own homes, let alone their communities. And so, as Africa Empowered, we have noted some of these outcries, and we have now said to ourselves, what is it that we can do now? Excuse me. There's all these outcries that have been raised by people. What can be done? Clearly, the main problem is access to information. Because if you have knowledge, you will know how to fill out those documents. You will not even dare take a half-filled stack of paper and apply for finance, because you know that you will definitely be declined. And you will know as well that you need to be educated about what is the best way of filling out that documentation and what is the best way of sustaining your business. And so, excuse me, we have come up with a program called the Ambassador Program. Okay. Now, what the Ambassador Program basically does is we've identified that it's not that the people at the communities are not intelligent, they're not knowledgeable, but it is a matter of us saying we cannot let language barriers, we cannot let technological barriers stand in the way. Excuse me. Sure. We cannot let such barriers stand in the way of people accessing information and stand in the way of people accessing facilities and help. And as I mentioned earlier, we have placed ourselves as a catalyst in fast-tracking some of these issues and the problems that people have raised. And now with the Ambassador Program, how we intend to do that is we're going to select ambassadors throughout the communities to say those people that stay in those very communities that have leadership potential, that have the ability to educate people. We're going to pick those people, train them, and in terms of training them, help them to train their communities, because they're the best people to do so. They understand the cultural nuances that are prevalent in those areas. They better to understand the language that is used in that area, the issues that are raised there. And it would speak to us saying, in terms of comparing an ambassador from an urban area to a rural area, they would address completely different issues. And they would be best positioned to deliver this message about black economic empowerment that is so much needed in the communities. And it's in a way that... And it's in a way that says, we have started by the journey to say that we want to start at finding the true soul of BEE. We want to find the true soul of BEE. And in teaching people and making them aware that they are entitled to this, that they are entitled to this economic empowerment, through this program of ours, the Ambassador Program, we will then create, in fact, we've already created training material that is pictorial-based, that basically, if somebody visualizes something, it will stay much more in their minds than just doing PowerPoint presentations. And we have engaged with corporates, and we're trying to engage with government as well to sponsor trainings for these communities. And we have basically reached a point where we've developed all the infrastructure, and we are now raising an outcry to say, who are the government institutions and who are the corporate institutions that can be able to participate in these programs so that we can sort of help in terms of fast-tracking this. And the most important thing as well, we want to channel down opportunities that government presents and corporates presents. And in terms of the relationship we've built with these two aspects of authority, people can, after learning that they can be empowered, access opportunities, and where they can't, they can basically be able to be provided skills, and we will put such programs as well in place in due course. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kofan. We have heard you, and members are here. They've listened. It's just a pity we did not listen to that. But if you do have a copy of that video, I think it will be a very good tool for us to use. Members, here's the presentation. Babuntule, Abu Kabaza.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I would like to thank the presenter for the input. I want to check here. I also know that this delayment of paying by the department, but we have never found out what are the causes, what are the reasons in the department, because everybody is saying that most of the smaller contractors, they disappear because the government is not paying. But we have not found out what is the problem. And it goes with the compliance. Most of the... We had that from the Public Service Commission, that it's about 65% non-compliant from the department. Have you find out, let's say, maybe a research of what is the problem? Thanks.
Thank
you, Chairperson. I wanted to find out what would be the role of the CTWs
in as agents of information dissemination when you constitute or where you structure your ambassadors program. Have you considered that? But yeah, I wanted to make this comment that, you know, for almost the first time since we started the public hearings, I hear someone saying, I have gone to the rural areas and have researched on what are the needs and the concerns of rural areas. And I think that has got to be appreciated and supported. Because if we do not focus on rural development as well, we will not be able to address the question of job creation, economic growth, and so on. But lastly, Chairperson, I linked to that, I wanted to comment as well, and perhaps those who are here today would want to have a bite on the issue, that what one has heard so far, and this is related to the point I've just made about, you know, this interesting focus on that area. What we've heard so far, SMM is involved in largely in retail and services activities. We haven't heard about SMMEs or cooperatives that seek to manufacture, even on at a small scale, manufacture and create this value add that we speak about. And therefore support for these SMMEs. And that would be very interesting for us to refocus, because, you know, if we continue to only focus on retail and services and not on manufacturing, we will not be able to speed up the process of making our economy a productive economy, and therefore create jobs on a large scale. But secondly, Chairperson, we will relegate our SMEs to being SMEs all the time. I sometimes like to talk about this emerging entrepreneurs that Chairperson Sizothi ziya emerge zakhasa zikhase zekshonila, and we need to open up and talk more about that as well, so that we broaden the scope of economic activity. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, I just want to concur with Honourable Kabaza that indeed this presentation touched one. It's just unfortunate that we couldn't listen to the video footage. Mine will be on. Research capacity, research methodology, it would have been more relevant for me if we could have a more specific or sectoral presentation, meaning that when we go to the rural areas, we know that everyone is poor. But women in the rural areas have more specific challenges. You'll get to a rural area where there are households heading by women. And sometimes the community is discriminating against women heading businesses also. And the challenges for youth in this rural area are also not the same as the youth in the more urban areas. So it would have been more relevant for us to know that in rural areas, this is the needs of specifically women, and how are you going to empower specifically women and youth in this rural area? Thank you.
Thanks, and online, Babma Basa.
Thanks, Covid Chair. Expressing appreciation as well. But the point that I want to make, Covid Chair, I want to make it such that even other presenters that are going to come and address us also speak to it. I think the comment made by Member Lai will also go the same way. It would be good if all coming presenters can also speak to it on the gender part. But on people with disabilities, from two aspects. The one aspect is where people with disabilities are part of the enterprise. But the other part is where people with disabilities are recipients of services. I'm saying this because I had one experience in my oversight role where an enterprise of people with disabilities, where they said most of the institutions, when they seek accreditation, they also claim that they train people with disabilities, amongst other, things that they provide. I'm not saying that all enterprises must serve people with disabilities, but it is desirable because that's part of our society. But what will be worse will be where they lie and claim that they provide that service, and where it is found that even if they say they provide that service, it just means very superficially, so that there is no quality and concentration on doing that. So that at the end, the organization, like the one that I visited, complains that, no, we learn that people say they train us. Mm-hmm. And they are then awarded credits. And we find they just don't train us. Or if they do, it is so minimal that it is meaningless. Thanks, Colleague Chair.
Thanks, members. I think that those are the questions. I'll just add, just to get clarity on the research that you conducted. I'm not too sure what was the research really intending. Was it only for young people? Was it a community kind of a research? Who was the research targeting? Secondly, did you also, during research, analyze the impact or get an impression on the impact of the programs in place? For instance, you have under agriculture, Masibele Masimini, or comprehensive agricultural program that is there, especially to assist the areas where there's the vast land for agricultural purposes. In terms of information, there were centers like Tucson centers put in place or established in all provinces. where all departments need to go there, because this kind of research must be balanced so that government must, at the end of the day, know where they are lacking. If we come to them and say, these are the challenges, but they must know that there are areas where they are really doing well and they need justice to improve and how to improve. So the research outcome must, especially after analysis, must be quite balanced, because you must check what people are saying. But what people say normally is out of frustration for not getting what they want at that particular time. And I think to add on what Mr. Kwabaza was saying around checking on the role of the community development workers, not only community development workers, there are ward committees where they must serve as, you know, information platforms, because their roles are very clearly specified, you know, in different legislation, and those kind of things must be known. We need to know whether there is impact or there's no impact at all. We have had all the issues that you've raised, but I thought from the research point of view, we were going to receive something much more tangible, because it's unlike a person who goes there for business purposes. Would just be limited, you know, to what he or she wants to achieve at the end of the day. If you're doing a research for the country, then that should be quite clear and specific. That's what I wanted to say around that. Thank you. May you respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of responding to the first question about payment delays, we have basically engaged with certain government departments. However, it has not been to a grave extent. In terms of just trying to also cover your question, Madam Chair, the research that we've done at the moment is now just the first phase of our campaign. The campaign was to basically say that we need to get information from all different spheres. Now what we've done is we've got information from the people that are actually at the grassroots that are intended to benefit. And what we'll be doing next year is rolling out other workshops of a similar nature to address the government side and to get their intake and their input in terms of what are the programs that they have in place that the people at the ground are saying are not being implemented. And we will also then provide a dialogue platform for the two parties to say, okay, fine, there's programs that we feel are working, but they're saying that your programs are not working. What is the solution? What are the grievances? And based on that, based on the information that we'll be collating, we will then be analyzing and trying to match up the different views and therefore give you a much more meaningful and meaty kind of report. Same goes with the corporate sphere of that as well. I don't know if that answers your question in terms of the target marketing. And then in terms of going back to payment delays, what we have gotten as well is just perspective from the people at the ground to say they are saying they're not being paid because they are required to bribe. They are required to know who basically operates in those departments and make those kinds of contacts to be able to get paid. And now those are the kinds, it speaks to bribery and nepotism, and those are the kinds of issues that people say they're facing on the ground. Now in getting the government's perspective, we will also then engage with them and say, these are the issues that they're raising. What is it that is not working, and which specific departments do you think are having teething problems in terms of following through the necessary processes? And over and above that, you also raised an issue to say it's lack of compliance that they're raising as a problem, to say these businesses do not comply. That is probably acceptable, but the main outcry from the people at the ground is that, what is it that I need to do in order to comply? And that is the step that is being frustrated, and that is the step that is sort of stopping whatever solution can come out of the engagement. Okay. And then...
No,
include the loss of submitted documents in the offices of the department as part of the reasons why payments are delayed.
Okay. Thank you. And just to answer then the question relating to CDWs and the role in terms of information dissemination, these very ambassadors that we're going to be choosing, or so I think they have already been chosen, stand to be corrected, but these ambassadors are prominent members of the community that are already engaged in similar kind of processes but do not have the necessary relevant information to distribute to people. And now, based on our engagement with government and with the corporate society, we will then use Africa Empowered as a channel to say, we've identified certain individuals that are, you know, that play key roles in the community. These individuals will be the ones that basically provide the information. They will be the so-called moving information centers, if you like to put it like that. And it will then also speak to the network. We've got an opportunities network that we're currently trying to put in place. It's an infrastructure whereby people, government or corporate that have opportunities can basically post this on there, and we manage those relationships and say, here are people looking for opportunities, and the government and the corporate say, we've got opportunities, and we're saying, okay, as Africa Empowered, we will oversee the exploitation of those opportunities by people at the grassroots level. And over and above that, we will provide comfort to say, we'll give you feedback in terms of the success in which those opportunities are sort of exploited. And so it is a long-term kind of goal. It's not a short-term solution whereby we're just going to provide research and just sit. And the main reason why we actually also started Africa Empowered was to become a catalyst in terms of providing a link between those seeking opportunities and those that are giving opportunities. That is the core existence of our organization at the moment. And then there was also another concern raised about women empowerment and youth. In terms of that, we are currently engaging with our research team to say that women empowerment in rural areas and women discrimination in rural areas is a very prevalent issue. And I mean, just recently we did a roadshop with Eastern Cape Development Corporation, where we went to about 5 cities, just educating them about DEE. And they basically, you know, you will not believe the outcry that was raised in terms of that, especially in the rural areas. And we saying, as Africa Empowered, through the ambassador program, we're going to deploy the very ambassadors to facilitate dialogue sessions, to facilitate outcry, so-called sessions, to make sure that whatever grievances that people have in that community are basically recorded and put on paper. And remember, every single workshop, every single dialogue that we make, we record on video, and we store away as content to say, whoever needs evidence or whoever needs to know what happened at a certain place, they can watch that. And now that we will basically, through our website, be constantly feeding people and the public with all the views that have been raised at the ground, so that we can also get people to be responsible about putting in resources to make change.